Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Cognitive Recalibration Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Shravan. We've got Taran here with us.
Hey, everyone.
So we're talking about The Batman, one of the most anticipated episodes of the year, and we really couldn't do it without a guest. And we've got Rev joining us for the first time on the podcast. So he's a fellow film enthusiast and I can say nerd, just like us. We've only recently met him, but I guess we made a very quick connection because he's really into everything comic books. Just like us. So welcome, Rev.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And it's rare that we have a guest on that's actually done more research into the movie than at least I have. I think we've had instances where people have done more research than Taran, but
yeah. I think everyone on the podcast has more research than me.
So he's actually watched it twice, 2 days in a row. We've only watched it once. It is a 3-hour movie, so yeah. It's a bit of a time investment, but thanks for watching it twice.
Yeah, it was definitely two lots of 3-hour movies for sure. Interesting. Glad to be here. It's a really meaty movie, I think,
yes,
to be able to discuss on a forum like this. And it's really great because I was about to tell you guys earlier, but like we haven't actually heard what each of us think about it until this very moment.
I've had a brief discussion with him about it
just after the movie.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I have no idea how you feel about it.
Yeah.
It'll be good to
let's see. Let's see what our thoughts are.
We had a bit of a different opinion, so I think it'll be interesting to see what you think about it as well.
In the initial days of our podcast, like we used to drive to the cinema together and watch the movie, and then on the way back we'd just not say anything.
Yeah, right.
So like we'll talk about it on the podcast, so it'd just be like a silent trip back. But nowadays we just kind of talk about it a little bit. Not in depth, but we talk about it. So the way we'll structure this episode is I'll do a bit of background on the movie, then we'll get into the comic book origins. So interesting fact, since we started this podcast, which is almost 4 years ago, we haven't talked about Batman. I think we've talked about Justice League, but we've never actually had a movie about Batman.
Just a Batman one.
Yeah. So this is the first time we're talking about him. So we'll talk a little bit about his comic book origins and also the Riddler, because he's the primary villain in this one. And then we'll get into our non-spoiler review, positives and negatives, and then we'll do full spoilers. And in between, we'll do some ranking stuff as well. All right, background-wise, so this is directed by Matt Reeves, who's known for his Planet of the Apes movies. This is actually only his sixth movie that he's directed, but he's been in the industry for quite some time. So his first actual feature film was in 1996, and it was a movie called The Pallbearer, starring that guy in Friends. Not Joey, the other...
Chandler?
No, the other one.
Oh, David Schwimmer.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Ross.
I've never heard of that movie before.
Yeah.
It's not meant
to be
that.
It's a deep cut.
It's not meant to be that good. It's, it's obviously a romantic comedy movie.
I'd never imagined this director doing a romantic comedy.
But before he did the Planet of the Apes movies, he was most well known for actually Cloverfield.
He directed that.
Yeah.
For some reason, I thought J.J. Abrams directed that.
I think he produced it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
He must have got Matt Reeves on board.
Yeah, so that's a bit of background on Matt Reeves, we can talk about his directing style once we get into the movie. Robert Pattinson, as I already mentioned and everyone already knows, he's Batman in this one. But other people in the movie, Zoe
Kravitz. Your wife not know that?
She didn't. What? Well, she basically didn't know anything about this movie. So she thought it was a sequel to the Nolan. So she's like, where are the other characters? Where have they all gone?
Stitch up. And walk into it thinking
yeah.
About.
Yeah. And she hadn't seen any of the trailers or anything. So, she went into it actually completely blind.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Zoe Kravitz is in it. Paul Dano is a character in it. We can talk about that. Jeffrey Wright is Gordon, who I thought was very good in this. Andy Serkis is always a feature in Matt Reeves' films. Colin Farrell is almost unrecognizable as Penguin, and we can get into that as well. Music, I just wanted to mention this because this gentleman seems to be featuring in a lot of different comic book movies. Michael Giacchino, he did the Spider-Man trilogy, the most recent Spider-Man trilogy. Budget-wise, how much do you think the budget was for this?
I don't know. It would be hefty. It would be easily over 200 mil, right? Like,
yeah, even just with the cast, I reckon you would have to pay a huge amount for most of those people. So
Reported budget is between 185 to 200 million. So it's a big budget movie, and it has been delayed quite a bit. So initially, this was meant to be directed and star Ben Affleck.
But that was technically a different movie. That was that's not this movie. That's a different movie.
This
completely.
This is a deep cut. Yeah, because the Ben Affleck cut of this movie would have been like Deathstroke. It would have been
on from Justice League. Right?
And that would have been really cool because he was in a pretty cool place as a Batman, like where he was like weathered and the Dark Knight Returns kind of vibe.
Yeah,
and he was kind of getting pulled back into it because of the.
That was one that they were going to do where Deathstroke was trying to hunt Batman. Is that right?
And finds out he's Bruce Wayne and like.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
But it seems like maybe Ben Affleck just had enough of people kept asking me about Batman and nothing
else. Yeah, that's right.
He did go to rehab soon after that as well. So
I think after that, he was still going to be in it and Matt Reeves is directing it, but then he just opted out of even acting in it.
Yeah.
And then they completely made it a separate movie, and it was just Matt Reeves' vision, essentially.
Yeah. So Matt Reeves was going to direct that Deathstroke movie initially?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Ben Affleck is an amazing writer as well. And so he was going to write, act, and direct. And then I think because when Matt Reeves took over, he initially planned to maybe direct Ben Affleck's script.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, all these people scared about Arkham, Deathstroke's on the hunt, and all this kind of like cool stuff. And then since Ben Affleck, you know, went through the rehab stuff and was taking care of himself, he opted out. And then I think it was just like a great choice for Matt Reeves to go, you know what, let's just start fresh.
Yeah.
And also WB probably with all the results with Justice League and everything like that, they're like, let's just bin this and do something totally different.
Although I don't know, it's making a bit of a resurgence now with Zack Snyder's Justice League and people want that back.
Yeah.
That never went away, though. There wasn't a point where people didn't want Zack Snyder to direct anything, so.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
His fandom is insane.
Well,
it's very loyal.
This is a divergence, but at the Oscars, they're doing a category for most popular movie where you go on Twitter and you can vote for the movie that you think should win. It's a new category that they put through.
Cool.
Oh, really? So like a people's choice type.
It's like a people's choice award. A different thing is lots of people hate that, but essentially for the movie to count, it has to have come out in cinemas, which Zack Snyder's Justice League didn't. But apparently, if you could count Zack Snyder's Justice League, it is miles ahead of everything else because of Zack Snyder's fandom.
Yeah. I saw Spider-Man No Way Home trending on that.
Apparently, Cinderella is winning.
No.
What?
Yes.
No.
Apparently, Cinderella. Yeah.
That's got to be a joke, though, because that's a really bad movie.
I think it's because Camila Cabello has fans, I reckon. Wow. So maybe they're,
That's all I had in terms of background. So box office wise, so far, I think first 2 days, it's done 57 million. This is in the US. So they're saying for the weekend, it's going to do about 100 to 150 million, which is decent.
Yeah.
It's not like record breaking or anything, but it's decent.
Yeah. Post-COVID era,
it's good.
That's good numbers. That's like, I think they're all measuring these numbers based on like ability to stay in the cinemas, you know, the resurgence of cinema. That's like a really good sign that people still want to keep going and they really appreciate the format.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder what the drop-off will be like on this, though, because I have a feeling No Way Home had a decent, like, one-month period where it's
very
just,
steady. Yeah.
Dominated.
But I think this would have a drop-off after a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, I think actually that's actually probably a more true sign of a success because, like, all the marketing leads to the first weekend.
Yeah.
And then the second week, when you have that drop-off number, that's when the word of mouth spreads. And if it's good or not, we'll determine if people keep coming back.
100%. Yeah. Because all the diehard fans go on the first week anyway. They're going to see it no matter what. Even if it's shit, they'll still see it.
Yeah.
It's really after that, which is where Spider-Man No Way Home did extremely well because it just kept raking in numbers. And cinema score-wise, we don't talk about this that much, but it got an A-, which is good, but I mean, it's good. It's not bad or anything. It's kind of what people expected. So
A- sounds pretty good to me.
It's not B yet.
Like,
What is this Rotten Tomatoes at the moment? Because I know it started at 93.
It started 91 or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's 90s. In the 80s now.
Yeah, High 80s. Last time I checked.
Let me double check.
Which is actually like there's quite usually a bit of a drop.
85%.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I think they consider anything over 80 like a really good critical success. Again, Rotten Tomatoes has flaws. Everyone says you can give it a 2.5 out of 5 or like, you know, a 3 out of 5 and it's still a positive thumbs up.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like.
Yeah, that's
right. I find the more reviews go on Rotten, like at the very start, if it's a good movie, it tends to be quite high. But the more reviews go on it, it generally always drops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a numbers thing.
Yeah. It's just a numbers thing.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman 1984 was a huge anomaly because it started out like really well. It was like high 90s, but then it ended in the 60s.
Oh,
boy. Yeah. So it kind of really dropped off that one.
And recently, Rotten Tomatoes actually opened up their reviewership to more people. So like YouTube reviewers, like TikTok reviewers, they could all do reviews on Rotten Tomatoes now. So the pool is so much bigger than it used to be.
Yeah, yeah. And this is another interesting thing about like whether reviewers and like how much weight we give that in terms of like whether a movie is successful. Because I'm not exactly sure, but maybe you guys know, like is there a formal review school that you go to or critiquing like skill thing you go to? Because otherwise, what's the difference between someone that maybe studied a little bit about film versus the average moviegoer, you know, like, and then now we're like, you know, movies sink or float based on Rotten Tomatoes a lot of times these days.
And
advertising and post-launch marketing for movies is a lot based on, you know, look at the Rotten Tomatoes score. It's in the 90s. You should go see this movie. And it's like, maybe, wait, how can we trust reviewers actually in our interest, you know, especially when it comes to IP properties like Batman or like Cinderella or anything, you know, like.
Yeah, I'm not sure what, because
you don't need a degree or anything to go on to Rotten Tomatoes and review.
Because there are YouTubers that are on Rotten Tomatoes now and they're not like formally qualified or anything. So they just watch movies like us.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah.
But look, I think it's like so good for the equity, right? Like I'm all about, you know, as many people getting involved as possible. But I'm not sure if there's like purists out there that think it's diluting the pool or, you know. But the more opinions, the better sometimes. Like you can just
get
a wider spread. Yeah.
All right. We can talk about sequels and stuff maybe a bit later. So I've got a bit of information on that. And there's a spin-off series and stuff in the works.
A couple of spin-off series.
Comic book origins. So when do you think Batman and Bruce Wayne first debuted in comics? Would have been
deep back. Cut. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
It's early 1900s, right? Like 1930s.
I'm thinking post World War One, pre World War Two.
Yeah, so 1920 something.
A bit later. So it's 1939.
Yeah.
March of 1939 in Detective Comics issue number 27.
Also, really interesting story on how Batman was first created. I don't know if you guys know the story. If I say who made Batman, what's the first name that comes to your mind? Bob Kane. Yeah.
I know who it is, but.
Yeah.
But it's not. Well, it's him.
Yeah.
But it's really actually him. Bill Finger that actually drew the character, created the backstory, did everything else. Then Bob Kane just put his name on it.
Even in Wikipedia, it says created by Bob Kane and Bill Finger. But I think there was a documentary that came out a couple of years ago and they kind of outlined that Bill Finger kind of did most of the work. The
heavy lifting, yeah.
Yeah.
Notable abilities. So this is like in the comic books. These are the abilities of Batman. So genius level intellect. Expert detective, skilled martial artist and hand-to-hand combatant, and utilizes high-tech equipment and weapons. So I think we've basically seen, to some extent, all of those in the movies. except for maybe Expert Detective. Like, we saw bits and pieces, but I think in this movie,
yeah,
we see more of that. Riddler. So, coming to Riddler, so when do you think he debuted in the comics?
It's a tough one. I'm not completely sure, but I'm thinking it's pretty early on.
Yeah. So, he's one of his original villains. So, he first debuted in 1948. Issue number 140 of Detective Comics. He was created by Bill Finger. So Bob Kane is not credited
for this
one.
Bob Kane
didn't
sweep in for that one.
And his abilities, and there's some parallels with Bruce Wayne on this one. So genius level intellect, criminal mastermind, skilled inventor, engineer, and escape artist, and utilizes complex riddles, puzzles, and lethal contraptions. And we've only seen Riddler in...
We've seen him in two movies.
Two movies, yeah.
Batman 1966.
Yes.
And then...
Batman Forever.
Batman
Jim
Forever.
Carrey.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know who plays him in 1966.
I'm not sure either. But have you seen the riddles in that movie?
No.
They're so bad. They're like... I think one of them is like, something is in the sea or something. Like, find it in the sea or something.
Yeah, okay.
And they're like, oh, C is the letter C, and C... Catwoman begins with C. It's the worst.
They're like, it's like nursery rhymes, like, yeah. Like play school.
It's like the worst. Yeah, the worst riddles.
He's definitely in this most recent movie graduated quite a lot nursery level rhymes.
From in Batman Forever, I don't remember if there's that many riddles in it. Batman Forever is probably my least favorite Batman in that era.
Yeah.
I've seen it the least.
I can't really remember that movie. I just know it was just very over the top.
I think he's just the Joker, isn't he? He's like the Joker.
Basically.
Yeah.
He just keeps saying, like, riddle me this as a starting of the sentence. And then he says his own sentence.
Yeah. So, it's not a riddle after
like
that.
It's not like a riddle. Yeah. And there's no clues. It's very campy. It's very in your face. Like, there's no real mystery. Like.
Yeah. It wasn't great.
It wasn't great.
But in terms of the abilities I just outlined, I think this particular one has basically all of them, and we can get into it when we go, I guess, spoilers.
Yeah.
All right. So, let's get into our non-spoiler review. So, if you haven't watched the movie, you can keep listening, and we'll clearly indicate when we're jumping into spoilers. But before we do that, so what is the story, high level, of this one?
So, high level? This is Batman year one, essentially, and he's coming up against this villain that is doing some murders and essentially giving Batman some clues around why he's doing the murders.
Yeah.
Batman's trying to solve the mystery around it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, at the end of year one, start of year two, it's not an origin story.
Mm. No.
He's weathered, you know, he's been on the night, on the prowl, like he seems like he's hunting daily, nightly, you know. And he's in that, like, in other forms of Batman media, he's in that form of, like, he really is just, like, angry and reckless as a form of Batman. Like, he's not as calculated as, like, later, I guess, maybe in the Nolan iteration we've seen. But, yeah it's, like, it's really grounded. Like, it's, like, this version of, like, if there was a serial killer like the Zodiac Killer on the loose, how would someone, like, another Batman. Vigilante, like, come across it and work with it, yeah.
Pretty interesting premise, something we haven't seen much in any Batman movies. So we can jump into positives and negatives. We can start with our guest in terms of what you thought of positives.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I thought it was an amazing detective story. In terms of characters and being true to characters, I think it was really, really great in terms of Batman being the world's greatest detective and that being something we haven't seen in movies really much at all. I'd say since maybe the last time we saw it was like, you know, he does a bit of it in the first Batman, like he's trying to investigate or find out what's happening or like in some of the animated stuff. But really, we haven't seen him since. Like, I feel like there's been a whole era of like Netflix docos of serial killers and like, you know, detective work and all of this stuff. Mm. But even since then, like modern media version of detective, we saw him. And I really liked that. And I also really liked, I really liked Catwoman. Catwoman was – Selina Kyle is like a very morally ambiguous kind of like stray character that is usually affiliated with Batman and also the villains. But I think she was awesome and I really did like Riddler. Like I really liked him. I guess like the thing with Riddler for me is – you can't erase Jim Carrey in your mind. You know, you guys, I'm not sure if you've probably played the Arkham games and stuff like that. So there's a lot of like, and you know, those guys are really, they're really like to the core authentic about, you know, from the animated series and then linking back to the comics and kind of like, you know, all these like comic runs following through. And Riddler from the animated series was elusive and I thought were pretty cool because he leaves clues everywhere and he's never really a main villain. But it's cool that they took that concept of like, you know, psychologically antagonizing Batman versus he's not like Riddler's not Bane, you know, he's not
a physical threat.
Yeah, he's not Deathstroke. He's not this guy that's going to give Batman physically a run for his money or break his back. But he's the type that's going to, you know, he says it in the movie, which we'll get into later. But he says like, you know, his basic vibe is that he's going to psychologically and intellectually antagonize him. And that's how he gets the superiority. And I think Paul Dano did an amazing job at that because he's like, he's this kind of like, I don't know, Paul Dano gets a rub for being a villain all the time. And it's like weird, you know, he's in Prisoners and he's in like There Will Be Blood. But he's like this guy that's like super, he's not creepy, but he plays those roles really well.
He's got a weird vibe.
Yeah. He's a really sweet guy in like interviews and stuff. But when he's on the camera, he just transforms into this person that's just like wearing this big, like, you know, he's wearing the Zodiac mask and he's running around and he's breathing heavy and he's just kind of just like pressuring Batman to kind of perform, which it seems like in this movie, which I thought another thing I liked was like, it's the first time we've seen him face like a real threat. Like, you know, it's like he's just been dealing with daytime, like, or like, you know, night after night, just like regular just villains.
Thugs.
Yeah, street thugs and stuff. Yeah. And now it's like an actual serial killer.
Although from some of the when we go to the spoilers, I'll let you know.
Yeah.
But there's a prequel book for the Batman and there's a deleted scene in the Batman that Matt Reeves filmed. And apparently he has come up against some other threats, which I can go through. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I think there's probably going to be we can get into this, I think, when the spoiler stuff starts. But I guess other little bits are, yeah, Gordon was a standout. I think in terms of characterization as a whole, it was really just well true to comics and like true to the characters. And you can't not mention the Batmobile, right? That was like insane. When that comes onto the scene, it's it's a great sequence.
Yes. Yeah.
Any positives from you?
So similar, when I'm thinking about Batman, there's three things it's probably four things I think about first. Batman suit. Think this suit was great for what it was. Like in this universe, it's a very grounded universe. It's a bit different to what the Nolan one is in terms of like the mobility and the stuff he could do with it. But I thought it really worked well for the universe. Batmobile, which I thought it's actually my favorite Batmobile now that I saw it. When I saw the trailer, I'm like, this just looks like a car. Yeah. But in the movie,
In
the movie, the way they use it, it is much better than that. Alfred, he was very good in this, but I think other Alfreds are better, but he wasn't bad at all. And then villains. And I think in terms of everything done in this movie, like Rev said, it's the most true to comics Batman we've ever gotten from a whole standpoint, whether it be the villains, the Batman, the suit, the car, the Batcave, everything was more accurate to what the comics were than any previous iteration, which is why I think it is elevated to what it could have been. If it wasn't as true to the comics in some of those aspects, it might have not been as good as it could have been. But because they did all those things so well, that's what makes it so good, essentially.
I agree with all of that. So it is the most comic book accurate depiction of Batman that we've got so far in theatrically released films, at least. I thought Riddler was great. I think Paul Dano, he looks, like you said, he looks like seemingly innocent. Like when you look at him, you're like, oh, what could this guy do? But then when you watch him on screen, he's actually quite menacing in his own way. Colin Farrell was brilliant as well. If you didn't know he was Colin Farrell, you probably wouldn't have even guessed it. That's how good the makeup was.
Great.
It's insane.
Yeah. And his performance as well, like you couldn't even tell that it was him. Like his voice is different. Everything's different. This is a very damaged Bruce Wayne. I thought we couldn't get any more damaged than Ben Affleck, but I think this one is probably a bit worse in terms of, you know, where he is at this point in his life. Like I said, Gordon was brilliant as well. Visually, it was very impressive. So it is even more grounded than the Nolan universe. So it's even more gritty and it's basically all in the dark. I think there's hardly any scenes that are during the daytime, and anyone that, you know, uses cameras knows that it's very hard to shoot in the dark. So they've done a very good job with this movie because it looks outstanding. Like,
visually, yeah, there's no point in the movie where you're like, I can't see what's happening.
Yeah.
There's even though everyone's wearing black for most of it and it's shot in the dark,
yeah,
you still see everything super clearly.
Yeah, yes, it's very clear. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even action scenes, you know, with moving stuff. Like, yeah.
I think that's basically covered all of my positives. I thought the city of Gotham was it's different to the other. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the best Gotham City, like true to Gotham City we've gotten as well.
Yeah, by a long shot, I reckon.
Yeah.
It's just like a character, right? Like,
Yeah.
The Nolan universe Gotham City in the Batman Begins is relatively good.
Yes.
But then afterwards it just becomes New York or Chicago or something like that.
I think it was Chicago. In this one, I'm pretty sure it's closer to, it was actually in between
Edinburgh and somewhere else. They shot some of it in Edinburgh.
Okay.
In London. Yeah. And
And probably New York, because there were some shots of bridges and stuff. But yeah, it was between, so in the Joker, we get like the worst of the worst, probably Gotham. But
the Joker is just New York in the 80s though.
Yeah.
Which is I think is based on what the vibe Gotham is going for.
Yeah.
You know? And I think Metropolis in terms of DC stuff is also New York.
But it's like New York.
Yeah. It's like a daytime upstate kind of like nice New York. Nice, but this New is the York, grungy, you know, 70s like Joker-esque New York. Yeah.
So I don't think it's quite as bad as what the Gotham they depict in the Joker is. Because that's kind of the worst of the worst. But it's closer to that than the Nolan one was. And even the Nolan one was not that great in Batman Begins, but it progressively gets better as that series goes on. Yeah, that's what I had in terms of positives. I can start with some negatives, and this is just not really even negatives. It could just be my personal opinion, because some people might actually think this is good. So it was 3 hours long, and I think it didn't have to be 3 hours long. Like, there were some parts that could have been cut, and it could have been paced a bit better. The way they structure the story is they spend about 20 minutes setting up the mystery, and then you spend the next 2 hours sort of solving that mystery. But then there's this part at the end where you feel like the tension's sort of been released a little bit, but that something else happens. Like, there's set up for other things, and, you know, there's a bit of a lengthy sequence, which was good, but pacing-wise, you kind of feel like you don't end on a crescendo. It kind of crescendos early, and then some stuff happens afterwards, which I thought could have been better, but it was still okay. This movie definitely pushed the PG-13 rating as far as they could.
In the UK, it did get the PG-13. It got the 15.
Yeah. I think that's pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
Based on the events in this film. Like,
yep. There's lots of murder.
Serial killer.
And I think initially this was meant to be, I think they were looking at maybe having an R rating.
If you add a couple more scenes in this is R rated. Yeah.
Or even just show the impact of what actually happened
in
this movie. Like, they get away with it pretty sneakily.
They just cut away to, when things start to get violent.
There is something about that, like with the official guidelines, like you have to have only like, you know, this much bloodshed or no knife piercing skin or any kind of like contact, where then it changes the rating. But yeah, I think Spielberg helped make that M15 like middle ground.
Yes.
You know, where you can have one or two.
But I think they basically ticked all the boxes until they could get to the just get that PG-13 rating. Someone was saying if this wasn't like a big studio production, because apparently every time you resubmit you have to pay or something. So you need to be able to afford to keep resubmitting and try to get it down to that PG-13. So because it was Warner Bros., they could do it. But if it was like some small studio, it would have just been like they would have just gone, they wouldn't have worried about it. Some other clear negatives for me. So obviously it is inspired by David Fincher's works like Seven and Zodiac. I think for me, when you remove the novelty that it is a Batman movie, a Batman detective movie, if you remove the Batman aspect of it, I think the mystery is just good. It's not like an amazing mystery. Kind of towards the end, it kind of teeters off. Once they start solving, they get to some sort of solution. And after that, it wasn't really that big of a revelation. So it pales in comparison to like, you can't compare it to those David Fincher movies in terms of like the investigation. But, you know, it's still good. One sort of nitpicky thing, and this could be due to the PG-13 rating, but Batman does sustain a bit of damage throughout the movie, but you never see him actually visibly get injured that much. Like, he's fine most of the movie. Like, he's running into, you see it in the trailer, like, he's running into gunshots and stuff. Like, people are shooting him and he's basically just walking into them. Obviously, his suit must be, you know, super durable, but they don't really explain it that much. So that's just a small nitpicky thing. Apart from that car sequence, there wasn't any real huge action standout sequences that I could think of. So it's more of a, don't go into it expecting an action movie. I think it's more of a murder mystery detective movie where you're trying to solve the mystery along with Batman. It's not an action movie. So I think people just have to set their expectations. Don't expect like a, you should never expect a Dark Knight because that's never going to happen again. But don't expect that type of movie. Any negatives from you guys?
Yeah, I think I'd have to agree with you on the runtime for sure. You know, part of me is like, kudos, Matt Reeves, like you went for it. And this is, you know, if this was not Batman as an IP, this would be such a great indie movie, you know, and you could do whatever you want. And so technically he's applied that, I think, philosophy to a big budget movie and gone for it, right? And like story, like, I think what makes a good movie is like what makes like people that have a really, really great story and then great characters and everything ties together. But like the runtime, I still think not for the sake of it being boring, I found most of it pretty interesting, but yeah. I think that, you know, there's a thing that the Russos used to talk about where, which is all I could keep thinking about when I was watching the movie. They talk about how like, you know, in Infinity War and Endgame, they like, cause they came from TV, they had to fit it to the 30-minute time. So they got really, they talk about how they got really skilled at cutting the frames, even the individual frames of like movies to kind of make it flow better and find that rhythm, kind of like a bit of poetry or whatever. And so they would fit it according to time. And in this movie, because of that concept and like how they describe some scenes, which is no point, like I won't get into it, but like I just couldn't help myself thinking, man, Matt Reeves, like you're a legend at this, but surely there's this, like, you know, this bit here that didn't need to be this long.
Yeah.
Like, right? Like in terms of commitment to the story, right? Like you have, you have Riddler doing something, you have Batman doing something, or you have Selina Kyle's introduction, or you have something, right? But how much more bang for your buck could you get? Right, in terms of effectiveness and still not compromise on story, and you could have still done something, you know what I mean? The, like, you know, if you strip it back, I don't think it's fully deconstructed. I think there's still some fluff in there, which adds to maybe 15 to 20 minutes, which I would cut down.
I would say so.
Yeah. And it's 2 hours, 55 minutes, right, in terms of like the runtime. And it's like, you could easily get it 2.5 hours and still make it a fantastic movie. So yeah, I'd have to agree with you on the runtime and, you know, like the stuff that's in there in terms of what I would cut, we could save for the spoilery bit. Yeah, I think the other thing I was thinking was there's a lot of great stuff that kind of covers the negatives. But like, so I'm like, you know, I find that I like this movie because I'm not looking for the negatives. You know, I'm not like instantly coming to mind. But one of the things I could think about is like in terms of the mystery itself, which is also spoilery, like the mystery itself doesn't pack as much of a revelationary punch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it is very subtle. It's very film noir. It's like very like, you know, you have to really be paying attention to some of the tricks. And like, I watched it the second time, right? And so when I watched it the second time, there was still those things that I definitely did not pick up the first time that we can get into maybe, but I realized that really enhanced my viewing the second time. And okay. I was like, man, that's a Riddler clue that I had no idea about that in terms of the way that he thought Batman had to think about it, that like now. So there's just some things that if you watch it once, which most, you know, audience members will, you're just not going to get like, you know, like Zodiac and
Seven.
Yeah, Seven are great, great David Fincher movies, right? And like David Fincher is this classic slow burn mystery kind of like realist kind of director, right? And so he doesn't necessarily pack that punch either all the time, which is works in his favor because he doesn't have the expectation.
Well, if you've seen Zodiac at the end, there is no punch.
There is.
No one knows who the Zodiac killer is and you never get any closure from it, but it's still a great movie.
Yeah.
And the mystery is still amazing.
Yeah,
so,
exactly. Yeah. And you know, with the thing with that is no one's expecting the Zodiac's identity to be revealed.
Yeah.
Because in real life, no one knows.
Yeah.
So it, like that works in David Fincher's favor and he can just say I'm being as real as I want to be.
Yeah.
Because it's the truest to the form. But sometimes I feel like with Batman or any kind of like, I guess like big budget mainstream movie, you kind of have to have.
It would be good if there was a better reveal at the end.
Yeah. Like, you know, something that's like there was some really big ones in there, but there was, you know, if they scattered that throughout, not asking for like a constant twisty kind of movie, but just something a little bit more like slightly jarring or shocking. you know, that changes his behavior. Because a lot of times,
they almost went down that route. I thought they were going to do it, but they didn't.
Exactly. And there were so many opportunities, I feel like, with the Riddler for having like a profound impact on him, like twist-wise, for him to like, you know, how cool, like I just thought it would be cool sometimes in the comics or like in the Arkham games where he has a riddle and it changes Batman. Like it changes him. He's like, oh, damn, I can't do that now. You know, he has to go. It makes him think. And you could argue that happened here, but I just think maybe a little bit more emphasis. And I don't know if that's a directing thing or a writing thing. It could be a mixture of everything.
I think I have to agree with you. I think it's probably the story that was written just didn't pack as much of a punch as it could have. It's still very good, and the mystery is like unraveled throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
Just right at the end when you get the reveal, you just wish the mystery was a little bit better.
Yeah. Maybe that's like runtime thing too. If it was more tightly packed.
Yeah, it might have been okay.
Yeah. The potential was completely there, and it did hit like 85, 90% of it for me too. Mm. But, you know, if we're nitpicking, like.
It's a very nitpicky thing, and it's kind of like, oh, I wish it was this.
Yeah.
And I know every nerd does this. They go into the movie and they put their own expectations on what the story should be and what should happen, which sometimes leads to you being disappointed because it's never going to be exactly what you wanted. They can't do that. And if it is exactly what you wanted, you're like, oh, they did surprise me. So
exactly. And that's the thing with toxic fandom, right? Like, I think Star Wars has experienced it forever. Like, you just cannot please anyone.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just have to have the trust. Like, you know, as like moviegoers, we probably all went in going, hey, Matt Reeves, like, we trust you. War of the Planet of the Apes was a masterpiece. Or the last two Planet of the Apes movies were masterpieces. You do your thing. You're writing and directing it. Let's just see what you've got. You know, you got all these cool pieces in place. It's a home run, but, you know, we're nitpicking.
One other thing I didn't mention is I think it does help to have prior knowledge of Batman and Batman characters.
Yeah.
Because in this, they kind of just go into it. So it is an origin story, which is actually one of my positives. There's no origin story in this. We don't need to see that again.
Yeah.
But there is assumed knowledge of some characters. And, you know, they kind of just talk about these mob bosses like you already know them. But if you're just going into this fresh, you're like, who's that?
Yeah.
Like, why is he such a big deal?
Yeah. Specifically Penguin. They refer to him as Oz for most of the movie.
Yeah.
So if you don't know that Oswald Cobblepot is Penguin, then you will be pretty confused.
Yeah.
And also, what's his name? Falcone is like kind of just mentioned to begin with. And if you don't know who he is, you kind of will be confused for most of it.
Yes.
Yeah. And also Maroni. There's Maroni and Falcone. And like Maroni is not actually seen. I try to find out if there was cast as anyone.
He's not in
he's
it.
He's not. No. He's just like on a TV screen briefly. Yeah. And
he's in jail for this movie.
Typically, like if you start mentioning Maroni quite often, which they do in this movie with Falcone, as a casual moviegoer, that's really easy to mix up. Like, you know, you're not going to know what that means. And, you really need to know the deep lore there.
Anything else?
No, not really. Like, some of my stuff's pretty nitpicky. And, like, we could go through it in spoilers. But for the most part, I thoroughly enjoyed it and do recommend it.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So, I give it. So, our rating is cognitive recalibration or regression.
Yeah.
Which is good or bad. Yeah. So, we give it a recalibration. So, we give it a thumbs up, essentially.
Yeah.
Definitely worth a watch. I think it's worth a watch in the cinema.
Yeah. I was telling a mate of mine coming out, like, out of a 10 score, and I was giving it, like, a maybe 8.5, you know, like, because I can't see it, like, you know, some, like, Dark Knight for me is like we shouldn't be comparing, right? But like Dark Knight for me is like a 9 out of 10, and this is not far behind. You know, it's like it's a pretty close 8.5.
I think it's
like,
very comparable to the Dark Knight in terms of how good it is.
Yeah. There are some narrative similarities as well, which we can talk about in spoilers. I just thought that the way they sort of end the movie, the way it's structured, is a little bit like the Dark Knight as well.
But
I thought the way they ended it was kind of like Batman Begins. Oh, just one particular part, actually. It's not in terms of narrative.
Oh, yeah, I think I know what you mean.
There's a part in the Batman Begins at the end, and the same exact thing happens at the end of this.
So, it looks like we've got a lot to talk about in spoilers, but we'll quickly do a ranking of where this stands for us. So, we'll do a top five because there's a lot of Batman movies. Our top five in terms of Batman, I did tell you live action, but we'll say theatrically released Batman.
Yeah. Okay.
So, you can include any animated movies that were theatrically released. Okay.
The only one I could think of was Mask of Phantasm. So.
Oh, boy. And what a one that is. That is.
Lego Batman?
Oh, Lego Batman as well. Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
I really like that movie.
It's actually, it's actually a good, fun movie.
Yeah. Like, it's the whole, it's a Batman, like, family thing we've never seen. Like, it's like, you know, I really liked it.
So, who wants to go first?
I can go. So, I think Dark Knight does edge this out just, but it is just, and that could change with further viewing, I reckon. And then this one. And then I would have to go Batman Begins after that. And even though I don't like this movie that much, it still probably is the fourth best one, The Dark Knight Rises. After that, it's tough. Could be any number of ones.
Batman and Robin.
You know, when I first watched Batman and Robin, I forced our family to go watch that. Like, no one wanted to watch that except me. I actually really enjoyed it. I was like 6 years old, but I thought it was the greatest movie ever.
Batman
1989.
No, I hate that movie, actually. I'm not a huge fan. And I hate Batman Returns as well. I don't like that movie.
It's not a Tim Burton guy.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Some people are like very, like they love those movies so much, like the 1989.
And look, Batman Returns. 1989 is a bad, but I will stand by that Batman Returns is a terrible movie. It's not good.
Even Michelle Pfeiffer didn't say it for you.
No. The weird Danny DeVito penguin is just...
Yeah, the penguin is too weird.
Yeah.
Strange.
Yeah. But there's a huge fan base for those movies. That's why the Flash movie coming up later this year has a lot of hype. Yeah.
Look, I'm looking forward to that still. But
Yeah.
Let's just go with that for the top four. Let me think about the fifth one.
Okay.
Yeah, after your one, you guys do yours.
Do you want to go next? I can go next. Yeah. Okay. So I'd have Rises at 5. The Dark Knight Rises. At 4, I would probably have Lego Batman. Like you said, I actually really like that movie. It's probably one of the best Jokers as well in that movie.
Joker is hilarious in that movie.
Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah.
At number 3, I would actually have this movie, The Batman. I personally really, really love Batman Begins. So Batman Begins is my number 2, and The Dark Knight is just a masterpiece, so we can't not have that at number 1.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, this is interesting. Like, so I think for me, number 1 is definitely still The Dark Knight. It's it, right? Like, and I think that the only reason why it edges this Batman out actually is because if I think about The Dark Knight, there's nothing that I can't deconstruct that movie anymore. There's nothing I would take out. You know, I couldn't cut it down anymore. But with this movie, I can.
Yeah. I think with The Dark Knight as well, if you just go Heath Ledger, you just can't. Like, Heath Ledger just elevates it too much.
Yeah, yeah.
And you just got to put it at number 1 for him, essentially.
And even Aaron Eckhart, like, they don't talk about him much because Heath Ledger was just so good. But even he was amazing in that movie.
Yeah. And I think it did well to balance two villains, right? The Dark Knight, like Spider-Man movies always mess this up.
Yeah.
They have way too many villains and don't know how to, like, create a hierarchy. But I think, Dark Knight's number 1. Yeah, Batman is number 2 for sure. And I think it is very close to Dark Knight because it's like, you know, like the Dark Knight didn't actually, I think, do Gotham that much justice. And it didn't do the detective side of it that much justice or the hand-to-hand stuff with Nolan's movies are not my favorite.
Well, I was discussing this with him after the movie and I said the hand-to-hand combat in all the Nolan movies is terrible.
Garbage. Yeah, it's very so bad.
Slow and very choreographed, essentially.
Yeah. It's like he could easily take one at a time. You know, like he's only fighting one person at a time.
And he does like a really slow like disarm and then like a punch each time.
Yeah.
I don't think it's good at all.
The hand-to-hand combat isn't, I agree with that. It's not that good in the Nolan movies, but the action spectacle is better in the Nolan movies.
But they didn't really go for that in this movie.
No.
There's not really, other than the car scene, there's not really an action I guess you could say the end part's a bit of an action spectacle, but... Yeah.
But there's nothing like the truck flipping scene in
The
Dark Knight or the
plane scene
the plane in Dark Knight. Rises. Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing like that.
Like, I just think of different scenes of the Dark Knight and I can't think of it being any specific city. You know, it doesn't feel like... It's not that memorable. Like, I could easily put that scene with the truck in 10 different American cities.
Yeah.
You know, or
yeah.
any CBD in the world, really. And that's why it's not personified.
Like, there's no defining feature of that Gotham. Like, what is it?
It's it's a gray mush, you know?
And also, I didn't mention this before, but the Dark Knight, terrible Batcave. Worst Batcave out of any of the Batcaves.
Yeah. Well, it's just the Wayne Manor is like blown up, right? And they're like underneath the... This Batcave was... We'll get into that later, maybe. But so the Batman number two, Dark Knight one, the Batman number two. I would say I actually don't rate Dark Knight Rises that much. Like
I don't rate it either, actually.
Like, look, Tom Hardy's awesome. Like, he's amazing in that. But I just think that's got a lot of fluff too.
And the story is very flawed.
Yeah.
It's definitely his worst one. But it's still probably better than most of Batman movies.
It's tough act to follow Dark Knight, right? Like, that's impossible. I actually think Mask of the Phantasm is number three. I
really like that as well.
I'm tossing up between Mask of Phantasm and Lego Batman for that fifth spot because they're both quite good.
They're very true. Like, like there's a trend, I guess, in my list is like whatever's the truest to the comics and animation. Because and like, you know, ultimate in terms of media overall, I think the animated series itself is like bar none.
The best Batman iteration ever made.
Kevin Conroy, right? Like, and that's what makes Mask of Phantasm, because he's the voice. And Mark Hamill is Joker.
Mark Hamill's Joker.
So I think that's three. I actually don't think I'm going to add any more. Like, I might leave it at top three. Like, you know?
The rest are all whatever.
It just feels like... four would be Batman Begins. Because I think Liam Neeson as like Ra's al Ghul is like a perfect casting. And I didn't like it as much, like looking back at it, because of, I thought it was maybe a bit too realistic at the time. Like, I just didn't think it was like, suitable to Gotham. And, you know, it really, really did his no-kill rule really well.
Yes.
The gadgets and the League of Shadows and like Ra's al Ghul, all that stuff was sick.
Yeah.
And I think that it's got a lot of year one kind of like links to it as well. But it's just like, it's a bit too... mid-2000s reality, you know?
And to be honest, the action is very shaky cam in Batman Begins as well.
Yeah.
I do like the cinematography in all of his movies, but Begins was nice when they go to like that Tibet setting.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
It was very nice.
And the Batcave and the whole origin story is done really well in Batman Begins. Like, Batman Begins came out of time.
The soundtrack is amazing.
Hans Zimmer, right? You can't, I think we forget, like, but Begins came out of time when the last movie was...
Batman and Robin.
Yeah, Batman and Robin. So it's like he had a big rethinking to do and he did it well. But I'll leave it at 4-2.
That movie came out in 2005.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
And so it ages pretty well.
Yeah. That's the thing though, like all these practical effect movies, you look back at some of the CGI now, even from like a few years ago, and you're just like, oh man.
It's terrible.
Yeah, it's so bad.
Yeah.
You can see the outline and the lighting's off and but Batman Begins is a classic practical effect.
That's why you go back to Jurassic Park and it still looks amazing.
Yeah.
But you go back to a movie in 2006 and it looks terrible.
Yeah, even like, some of the Marvel movies, like recent Marvel movies. Some of the explosions in Captain America, I was like, oh, my God.
There's this one.
Captain America.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look, I love Infinity War, but there's this one scene I just – it always, like, it's burned into the back of my head and I can't get over it. It's the part when Iron Man first suits up in Infinity War and the CGI when the head thing comes down is just one of the worst CGIs.
It's so bad.
It's very bad.
Yeah. And they had a budget, right? They had the biggest budget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyways, I was trying to not bring up any Marvel stuff. Like,
All right. I think we can jump into spoilers. So this is the point in the episode where if you haven't seen The Batman, you go watch it and then come back and listen to our spoilers.
All right, spoilers. So we'll go beat for beat, I guess, while we'll talk about the...
Yeah, we don't have to go like through every...
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank.
LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Single detail, but I did like the beginning. So it starts with Riddler essentially spying on his first victim, right? I like the scene after this where they have a sort of a lengthy sequence where they introduce Gotham.
Yeah.
And
Batman's giving the narration.
Very sick.
It's very noir. That's what it reminded me of. And it's like he's like writing a diary. Essentially, it's like a diary entry that he's writing in.
Yeah.
Very cool. And it ends in his introduction as Batman. And he absolutely beats the crap out of these guys.
It
was amazing.
There's a couple of things from that. Like Riddler's entry when he's like, you know, the mayor's walking around and then he moves and then he's just standing there.
Yeah.
It was like the most tone-setting entry I've ever seen. Like in terms of like psychological horror, like it does a slight horror feel. Like we haven't really gotten horror in Batman, which doesn't make sense because he's such a scary, like his fear is a big component of his theme. So that was one thing. And the second thing was like, I really, really liked how it was based on Halloween. Like it started on like, because there's a comic run, like The Long Halloween. And it starts like, you know, and he is not a freak on that night because everyone's dressing up, you know, you know, everyone can get away with stuff. And
talking about The Long Halloween, a lot of people thought this movie would be a direct adaptation of The Long Halloween.
Yeah, right.
I actually read it beforehand to kind of get a gist of it. It's not an adaptation of
but
the only similar thing is it does start on Halloween, Halloween does as well.
Yeah. I think they're doing an animated movie.
They've done it.
And they got a part two or something, right?
Yes.
Like that.
There's actually two. There's The Long Halloween and then there's a sequel comic to that as well. So they're doing
both.
Yeah.
Because in The Long Halloween, as like I saw this like YouTube video of this guy, like it's kind of like an audiobook, but he just kind of describes plays all the roles in the.
I think I've seen this. Yeah.
It's like a good like.
And they show the panels
summary.
Of the.
Is that Comic Storian?
I think so. Comic Storian. Yeah. And so like, you know, in that there's so many links to this movie. It's like deeply influenced by it. But there's like, you know, Falcone and Maroni are both in this. And Selina Kyle, like spoiler, we're in heavy spoiler, right? So Selina Kyle being Falcone's daughter is great. It's so good. Like it's like, you know, that's a deep cut. But yeah, no, I loved it. I love this movie a lot.
I thought the sound design of Batman was... So he's not as big as other Batman that we've seen. So I think Ben Affleck Batman was probably bigger.
Yeah.
But the sound design makes him sound like he's massive. Like when you hear him walking in the... like in his introduction scene, you see him. You don't see him yet, but you hear him in the darkness. It was like, who is this guy? This guy sounds like he's, you know, 200 kilograms. Where's it coming from?
And he's
very intimidating, which you, like, in previous Batman, you don't see it interact with the general public as much, but he does interact with people in this. And, like, he just stares down people and just looks directly at them.
Yeah.
And you can just see them, like really get scared by him.
Yeah.
It's very intimidating.
He's very uncomfortable as a presence.
Yes.
I think Robert Pattinson... is really underrated, right, as an actor. But, like, I was hearing some of the stuff he was doing to get ready for this, and he was just like, you know, he was writing a journal, and he was just like, you know, every night he's going out, you know, that every fight he's getting into is personal. It's like someone said something personally to him, and that's how he's approaching every interaction with everyone.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can really feel that, I think. It comes across quite transparently in this movie.
Yes.
Because he's really just like, and someone else, like, the other thing he was saying that he actually got from one of the forums that he was reading about his character is, like, someone was like, you know, Batman goes out every night because he wants to make sure that he, like, you know, the night his parents died, he couldn't do anything. But by going out and fighting every night, it's like he's keeping his parents alive.
Mm.
He's trying to, you know, more people he beats down that night, yeah, it feels like he's succeeded, or like, you know, his parents are not going to die. You know, like, you know,
it's kind of reliving that night.
Yeah, but in a different, like a multiverse kind of situation where he's able to do something about it.
Yeah, that's right.
But
yeah,
obviously that's really not
And healthy. You see that parallel in this movie a little bit with the first guy that dies. He has a son, and he kind of parallels himself to that son essentially in this.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, kind
of stares him down a couple of times.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, but yeah, because like also in this movie, Thomas Wayne was running for mayor, right?
Yeah.
And so this is the mayor's son, or like the current mayor's son. So there's like a lot of parallel. Yeah. I was thinking, I said to a mate, I was like, oh, mate, maybe this guy turns into Robin or something. You know,
yeah, I think they might set up.
What was his last name?
Oh, I don't know.
I can't remember, but it wasn't Drake or Grayson or anything like that.
It wasn't a known Robin.
One of my friends would probably want to hear this because he was telling me about this. The guy that's like half painted that's in the start scene.
Yeah. Yep.
He plays Robin in another version of, I think on the show or somewhere else currently. But they hired the same guy to play this role.
Oh, okay. So he plays Robin in like an animated show or something?
No, like I think actually live action, but I don't know where.
Yeah, yep.
But he was saying that they suspiciously or not like intentionally like hired the exact same actor to play this role at the start of the movie.
Hmm.
And he's like the guy that Batman lets off, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, what an opening, right? And like all the bat signal from multiple criminals' perspectives looking up, like, he could be anywhere, right? He could be.
That was the coolest scene where it's like all the criminals look up, and then it's like three different criminals, and they look into the shadows, but Batman isn't there. But they all run away.
Yeah.
But the third set, they look into the shadows, and he walks out.
Yeah. Coolest entry,
That immediately hooked me in. That was best entry to any Batman movie I've ever seen.
And he's like, you know, you hear like you were saying, with the footsteps on the train, you know, on top of the station, and he's like, you don't know where he is, like. But yeah, also, we haven't talked about this yet, but lots and lots of controversy around Robert Pattinson being cast, but did he deliver or did he deliver?
I strongly believe he's the best Batman.
Yeah.
I didn't think he was great as Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
Just because he was really depressed and like.
Yeah.
He also wasn't Bruce Wayne for that much in this movie.
Yeah. Most we didn't get much of it.
Batman.
To be honest, I thought it would be the reverse. I thought it would be a really good Bruce Wayne, but not good Batman.
Yeah.
But he killed it as Batman.
Yeah. It's like a Heath Ledger situation, right? Like, no one thought he was going to do that well. Or even Ben Affleck. I think no one thought Ben Affleck was going to be a good
And Christian Bale as well.
Yeah.
And Michael Keaton.
Yeah, like everyone.
Except for George Clooney. People thought George Clooney would be good.
Yeah. One thing I would say about that initial sequence where he's introduced and he takes down all the guys, and the guy he is saving, he doesn't say thank you. He's like, don't hurt me.
Yeah.
So this Batman, he isn't seen as a hero. He's seen as someone who just punishes criminals.
Yeah.
But you do see that arc.
They're basically setting him up because he says he's vengeance. That's how he introduces himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As well.
Also, amazing line that is going to be quoted for years now.
Years ago. Yeah.
Do you know how people kept saying, I'm Batman after The Dark Knight and Batman Begins?
Yeah.
It's going to be I'm Vengeance now.
Yeah.
But then, his arc in this movie is essentially letting go of that. So he doesn't want to be essentially fueled by vengeance anymore.
It was a really great arc.
Yeah.
It's interesting because like maybe we take for granted that Batman's always like dark, but he's always hopeful, you know? But he actually isn't at the start of this movie.
He's very unhopeful. He's just out there to try and you almost think he like enjoys going out there just beating people up. And, like if it kills him, he'll be like, I'm happy. I want to get killed.
And that's kind of what Alfred kind of alludes to in the next couple of scenes, you know? Yes, and he's kind of just like, hey, you know, like, you can't keep doing this. It's going to break you. And yes. he's like, I want it to break me. Like, yeah. you know, this is what I
And his relationship for. With Alfred, and this is very different to other relationships that we've seen between Bruce yeah. Wayne and Alfred, because he's kind of like...
He's a dick to him to begin with.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the very start, he's an absolute dick to him.
Yeah. And like, I think it was clear that he's not like the classic Alfred father figure. You know, like, and Michael Caine, who's a legend, was clearly a dad to Christian Bale. Mm. But in this one, I don't know. Maybe you guys got that hint. Like, I got the hint that he was maybe the one who taught him how to fight and stuff like that.
Yeah, does say
And it seemed like he was, he does say it. And it seemed like it was more of like a disciplinarian and like trying to keep him in line more than where Michael Caine was like nurturing and loving.
Like, he's this but Alfred's a little less why do we fall, Bruce, but a little bit more like kicking him down
and then telling him to get up.
Now you get up. You can see how he turned out that way, like,
but he does say he taught him how to fight at one point.
I
was gonna say, you see that arc come back again, and they do like build on their relationship.
Like mutual respect there.
It felt a bit like, I don't know if this is a good comparison, but you know that movie Creed?
Yeah.
You know, Rocky being like classic Rocky, right? And spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen Creed. But yeah, he gets cancer and he has to go through chemo, and, you know, they end up being stronger after they have a fight over the cancer thing. It felt like that a little bit here, where the Alfred is quite tough and Batman is this like up and coming, you know, like, very talented, very like, you know, like a high energy kind of like disciple, kind of trying to outdo, you know, what's been done before. And then after that, once like Alfred gets like injured later in the movie with the bomb, they get to mend things, and he gives them some more clear information about how he can, like, it's like a, you know, classic Master Splinter kind of like, you know, Miyagi kind of like move.
I feel like that conversation could have, like, I'm not sure if it might have come up earlier, like about his parents, because obviously Alfred knew something about what happened to his parents, but looks like he never actually discussed it with Bruce.
I think the thing is, with the way that Bruce is in this movie, maybe if he did tell him, that he would have just gone out and killed him. Is the worry.
Maybe that's why.
I think they were also like not sure exactly, like, you know, of what exactly happened.
I think he
happened.
Does say... You can't say for sure, but it's
because he's like, I wish I knew for sure.
Yeah,
you know, and then because it's clear that even he would have done something about it.
Yeah,
that's what I got from my vibe.
But by the end of the movie, with all the puzzle pieces that come together, it's kind of like, it was him.
Yeah, for sure. And it's cool that also this Alfred's really integral to the plot. Like, he's solving the Riddler puzzle while Bruce is asleep or like recovering.
I liked it how they. Like, did it downplay Alfred's abilities? Like, he's smart as well. He was in the army.
And
He, like, knows how to fight. He knows how to solve riddles and stuff like that as well.
Yeah.
Obviously, Batman's the one that figures most of it out in the end.
Yeah.
But Alfred is still a valuable asset.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Little touches where he gave him his cuff links and, you know, things like that. And it seems like, you know, he's the classic trying to pull him into balance. You know, like, you need to also be Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
You have, like... But he's definitely not really Bruce Wayne at all. Like, I feel like he's just Batman the entire time.
Yeah.
Which also what I'm really glad for, because I think in other movies, we never see enough actual Batman.
Yeah.
We always see...
It's a Batman-heavy movie.
Yeah.
I think if you count the amount of time he's Batman and the amount of time he's Bruce Wayne, it's probably like a 90-10.
Yeah.
I would say so.
And even in that 10, he's like basically Batman without the suit. Like, exactly. He's just like acting like Batman.
This is the version of Batman and Bruce Wayne where if you look at Bruce Wayne, you'd never imagine that he's Batman.
Yeah.
Like the other ones you could kind of see like, oh, this guy could be Batman. In this case, like, you only see him in a couple of scenes, but he goes to a funeral, and in that he basically doesn't say anything. And he goes up to Falcone and, like, you know, they tell him to, he's like the Prince of Gotham, and they tell him to go away. And then the person running for mayor, she comes up to him and she basically just like tells him he's not doing anything.
Yeah. I love that.
I think everyone just thinks he's like a recluse.
Because that's what Falcone says, right? This is the only, it brings out the only other recluse guy in Gotham.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I love that scene with Bella Real where she's like, you know, my office has been trying to reach you, but
they say
you're unavailable. And you're not doing enough for the city.
Yeah.
And there's one of the trailers that cuts that speech. into like scenes of him in the Batmobile, like trying to hunt down Penguin. And yeah, so maybe it's like, you know, the next one or whatever, he'll become more of the billionaire playboy.
Well, that's my favorite type of Bruce Wayne, where he's a billionaire playboy. So that's what I hope for. I can see Robert Pattinson playing that role, but in this movie, he's really depressed. So like this Bruce Wayne, I don't know, unless he goes through a transformation somehow.
It was definitely emo. Like
very emo.
Like My Chemical Romance kind of Bruce Wayne. Like, like early, mid-2000s.
Like. I don't think he smiles like once in this movie.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. Like, does he smile at all?
I don't think so. Yeah.
There's not one smile. Does he? And does he ever say he's Batman?
No, it says I'm Vengeance.
Never says Batman either. Yeah. But they do refer to him as Batman because they show papers and stuff and it's got...
And the Riddler addresses him as Batman.
With the
letters.
With the letters,
So, I mean, maybe this is a bit more of a plot-heavy question, but do you guys remember exactly why the Riddler chose Batman for this? Like, because, you know, like, oh, and here's another... Okay, maybe this is the bigger question here. Do you think that Riddler knows Batman is Bruce Wayne?
No, he doesn't, because in the end scene, Batman goes to see the Riddler and essentially they're at his house and they're like decoding some messages and then Batman comes to the realization, he's like, oh, he knows who I am. So then he goes to see him and then Riddler goes on this huge rant about Bruce Wayne. Yep, and you see that they have a bit of a backstory. This is also in the prequel book. Mm. So the Riddler was an orphan and then... The Waynes were doing a huge donation to the orphanage that the Riddler was at, and the Riddler went to the same school as Bruce Wayne, and he was always envious of Bruce Wayne because when he became an orphan, everyone's like, oh, the poor kid, he's an orphan. And he goes through this in the movie, like he's an orphan, but and he doesn't have his parents, but he had all this money.
Yeah,
and he's like, nah, to be an orphan is like to live on the streets and
have no
nothing.
Resources, right?
So he's always been envious of Bruce Wayne. So he wanted to kill Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
But he sees Batman as this kind of someone that's at the bottom of the barrel as well. So like no privilege. I think in the end, this movie is about class, a lot of it.
Yeah,
it's about like the high class taking advantage of the low class.
Yeah.
And he sees Batman as one of the low class. So
he's fighting for the low class.
He's fighting for the low. So he wanted to work with Batman
to
take down the high class, essentially.
So he does say that a lot. You're right. I think he does say, thinking about it more, he does say, like, you know, let's do this together, you know, to Batman quite a bit.
But in that scene, I thought he actually did know.
Yeah, I thought so too. Yeah. Because he's like Bruce Wayne. And I thought he was like being jokingly trying to like antagonize him, saying that he knows, but he doesn't, you know,
Or
leave it ambiguous. Like,
but I think he doesn't figure it out in the end. And Bruce, like Batman realizes it. He's like, oh, he doesn't know it. But then he's like, but we can watch it together. He's like, oh, what? There's more?
He says like, you know, we were so close or something like that. Right. Yeah. Or, and then, it's cool to see Batman's face react to that and be like, oh, okay. And he starts moving in. That scene, by the way, with him in Arkham. By the way, I'm so glad they're using Arkham Asylum properly.
Yeah.
And second of all, like, Riddler in that scene is the first time we've seen without his mask properly, right? That scene is so cool because he's like, Riddler, like, gives me, this is the stuff we were talking about earlier, but he's, in terms of the spoilery stuff, he looks like Paul Dano in Prisoners, right? He looks like this guy who's got glasses, big glasses, and he talks, his, like, the way he's in the character sounds like Jim Carrey, but isn't Jim Carrey. And it's creepy and real because he's like yelling things, but he's also like, you know, he like starts.
He's still menacing.
He's menacing. Yeah. And he's the way he says words is like he says like a vowel, right? And he goes, and then he like uses it into the sentence.
Yeah.
Like just something about the way he characterized that is like, you know, it sounds a lot like the voiceover in the Arkham games. He's not just this quiet, deep breathing, like serial killer behind a camera. He's actually got like a bit of personality and he's a bit loud and like, you know, he's not just this quiet, you know, Zodiac killer. And I think that was a really cool active choice by the Riddler to take because he's quite egotistical. Like the Riddler wants to win. Like he wants to beat him. He's got a
bit
of
energy. And he wants to be the smartest man in the room.
I love the line when he says to Batman, like, oh, you're really not as smart as I thought you were. Like, that is like the whole of Riddler. Like,
but the joke's on him because he doesn't figure out that he's Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, exactly.
And it has parallels with, I don't know if this is just general Riddler mythology, but like he seems to have a fascination with Batman a little bit. And the Jim Carrey one, he's like the biggest fanboy of Batman, right? He loves Batman. And that's the reason he like gets into riddles and all that as well.
Yeah. By the way, with riddles, they were great. Like, in terms of seeing mainstream riddles happen on a big screen like that, it's very cool as a shared audience experience to see everyone try to figure out where it's going to go, you know, or like what the riddle means. So this is the thing I was going to say earlier that I figured out in my second viewing, but there is one scene where, you know, when they capture the most amazing like Penguin Batmobile scene. Right. And like Penguin fully transforms Colin Farrell and he's like, you know, vengeance. And he's like chasing him. And the Batmobile, when that Batmobile turns on, the whole shit, like theater rumbles.
Yeah.
And
that was the sound design on that Batmobile was out of this world. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah.
You just can't watch that on demand at home. No. You know what I mean? Like, you just cannot. But then he chases him, right? A great Batmobile scene, like practical and all that stuff. You know, when they're getting the clue off him and they think that because Penguin is a rat, like because El Ratalada, I think.
Yeah,
is
the rat with wings.
The rat with wings, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's cool because it could be Falcon, it could be Batman, it could be a bat, or it could be Penguin. And they get it off him. You guys might have actually picked this up, but I didn't on the first viewing. But you know when they go, he goes, oh, El Ratalada instead of La Ratalada? So he goes, who taught you Spanish? Like it's
female, male.
Yeah. And so like I was just like, oh, what's the big deal? Why are they even bringing that up when I was watching it? But then when they go into the next clue, it's URL for the website. You know, and they go to the next like thing. I didn't realize that URL Ratalada is like the reason why it's L not La. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's El Ratalada. So it's like, oh, so then he goes into the chat like and gets him to the next thing.
Yes.
On the first viewing, I was just like, oh, okay. He just gave him a clue, but I didn't really get it, you know? Like, it's a lot of big moving parts. But this is, I'm sure if you watch it another time, there'll be more and more.
There's probably more.
It's deeper,
There's real deep cake, yeah.
What I will say is, though, this movie made me realize how bad I am at riddles because I solve none of these. I'm like, I would not be good as Batman.
Like that part where just after the funeral sequence where it's Batman and the guy with the...
Gil Coulson.
And he's got the three riddles that he has to solve.
And Batman's just solving them. It's just like, it's this, it's this.
And you know what? That's another scene where like it makes sense that Riddler wants to work with him because they're both trying to get the rat out of Gil Coulson.
Yeah.
And he won't give up. He literally is like, I'd rather die than know who the rat is. Yeah. You know?
It's like, it's just me if I die here, but it's my whole family if I give up
it's
the rat.
It's everyone. Yeah. That was a great, those riddles are great. Even the thumb drive, like the joke on the thumb drive.
Yeah. Yep. There is some dry humor in this movie. Like not like laugh out loud funny, but the Penguin's actually quite funny in this movie.
Yeah.
There are moments of levity. Yeah. Like, I thought the Nolan movies were quite serious, but looking back, they got way more jokes than this one.
Yeah. It's quite a, you know, classic blockbuster movie, right? Panda's for everyone. This one does not panda at all. It's really you're in deep or you're not in. Like,
and Batman's, he's not a funny character. No. So no. He's very serious. So they were just very true to what he is. We can talk about each of the murders that happen.
Yeah.
So we've already talked about one of them, which was the
mayor.
The mayor's the first one's
the mayor. Yep.
Yeah.
The second one's the commissioner of police.
Yep.
Which opens the door for Gordon to become the commissioner.
Yeah. Great deep cut.
The third one is the DA.
Yes.
Which opens up the door for Harvey Dent to become the DA.
True.
Yes. Yeah.
And then the fourth one is, it's meant to be Bruce Wayne, but it gets Alfred a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
But Alfred doesn't die.
So what I was talking about before in the non-spoiler section was you find out Riddler essentially just gets caught. Someone just gives them a clue or something. They're like, oh, he's in a diner. And they just go get him.
Yeah, someone tips them off that they saw him go down the fire escape into the diner.
He's just ordering a coffee or something.
And they just catch him, right?
Yeah.
So this felt a little bit like, remember The Dark Knight when they do have that truck sequence and then Joker gets caught.
It's the same thing because he gets caught on purpose.
Pretty much, yeah. It's very similar. Yeah. He gets caught on purpose. And then there's like a whole sequence after that. There's like Joker has this whole other plan after that, right? And there's all this action that
you said Joker, but it's Riddler.
I mean, in Dark Knight.
Yeah. I mean, the Dark Knight. Okay, yeah.
But to be fair, they both do.
They both, yeah.
And Riddler, obviously, yeah, same thing. Yeah. I just thought the action after that just wasn't that great. Like,
I did enjoy the part when Batman beats up all those guys that were trying to shoot up the stadium.
The other Riddlers?
Riddlers, yeah.
Oh, that's a good point. Like, yeah. I think the fact that the other Riddlers are there is such a good modern-day story. Because, like, how he recruits the other Riddlers.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's such a, you know, misinformation era. Like, you know, you can create a following and stuff, and it's pretty scary. Like, it's quite realistic. Like,
how many followers does he have? Like 500.
500. It's very realistic. It's like you could see that happening with misinformation these days on the internet. Like, you could definitely just get a cult following and somehow get something like this to happen.
And you know, like at the mayor's funeral, there's signs of the Riddler's question mark. People are pro Riddler, at the mayor, and like. That's like a big social media, like with his live streaming thing. Cause he is really, this story is really a classism story. It's like all good Batman stories are. But it's like he's talking about, you know, like it's like a Robin Hood thing. He's killing people, but so people don't seem to mind. He's killing people because they've done bad things.
Exactly.
You know, but it's like, it's not even for him to decide, but it's like, you know, he's rallying this.
He kind of does have like ultimately good intentions. Like,
yeah.
The way he's going about it is obviously not right.
But yeah. It's kind of like a Killmonger. Oh, yeah, I won't do a Marvel thing.
Killmonger?
Yeah.
It's actually quite similar to The Dark Knight when you think about that, because that's also a classism story.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of parallels. And even when I first, back in 2008, when I watched The Dark Knight, I felt that was too long when I watched it in the cinema, because I was like, I thought it should have ended there. Like, that's where it kind of really peaks. And then it kind of just teeters on. And then it does crescendo at the end again with Harvey Dent.
The boat scene's very good in The Dark Knight.
The moral dilemma.
Yeah.
And then Harvey Dent at the end.
You know, the thing with Dark Knight, though, it's not like, look, this is going to be a really controversial opinion, but I think that Christian Bale as Batman is not what I think of as Batman.
No, it's not. It's not an accurate Batman. It's a good character for what it is.
Yeah.
It fits the world, Batman, right?
Because they obviously weigh the world around it. But I just think that, like, I don't know, like the gravelly Batman, he's intellectually there. It's just more he's doing the grappling hook. He's doing the classic Batman detective stuff. But, you know, he does do something. They do detective work. Yeah.
No, but anyone could do that. If you had the technology, anyone could do that. It's the thing in this Batman. I can't do the stuff he does in this.
Yeah.
Like, I can't solve the riddles and the things that he does.
Yeah.
But if I had that bullet casing hole thing that he has in that movie, I can solve the same bullet thing that Batman did. I just need the money to do it.
And I still, to this day, I still don't know how that exactly worked. He's like, he shot some bullets and he figured out where the fingerprint was or something, right? Like,
he shoots bullets into a wall and then he gets a fingerprint
Like what bullet it is. Anyway, so like based on The Dark Knight is a much better Joker story than it is the Batman story.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
And
it's basically not a Batman movie.
Yeah, and that was my gripe, right? Yeah. Even in The Dark Knight Rises, even though he's the one who's rising, all of the Nolan movies, as amazing they are, they're never really about Batman. And that's the frustration, because Batman's never the main character in his own movie.
Except for Batman Begins.
Yeah.
Which is why I really like Batman Begins, because that's like the actual Batman story.
Yeah, yeah.
Out of the trilogy, he's the second one's not about him at all. He's hardly even, like, for parts of the movie, he's not even in it. Like,
no, exactly. Yeah. And you can replace, and the reason I feel that way is you can replace Batman with Superman or any other person for that example. Like, you can regular citizen.
You could put Green Arrow.
You can put Green Arrow in there. Yeah.
The poor man's Batman.
He's still pretty rich, but
And it would be the same. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it wouldn't be that different, which is a bit.
But this pure Batman movie.
Pure.
Yeah.
And he has clear arcs from start to finish, which I thought were well earned arcs as well.
How do you feel about the Selina Kyle Batman relationship?
Selina Kyle, well, you said it to begin with. Zoe Kravitz is Selina Kyle, 100 times better than Anne Hathaway as Selina Kyle.
I agree. Yeah.
Way more accurate to how she is in the comics as well.
Yeah.
Thought the relationship was a bit rushed. but in the end, I was okay with it. Like the first time they kiss, I'm like, oh, I don't really see it, but yeah. I guess I just webbed with it.
It was more her kissing him than
She went for it. Yeah.
Yeah. She's kind of fascinated with him more than he is with her, I guess. She's like a means to an end for him. And
they both have information that the other one needs. That scene where like he, you know, like she's wearing the eyepiece, which I thought was really cool.
That was really good, actually.
Yeah. The eyepiece is awesome. It's like a detective mode thing.
I love it how he, at the start where he goes to the crime scene and you see him just looking at everything and you're like, what's happening here? Yeah. And then he goes back to the Batcave and replays everything. Yeah. I'm like, oh, that's so sick.
And you can just see this guy's like, he's just so into this work. Like he's recording every night.
Yeah.
And he's rewatching like what he does.
Yeah. Yeah. And writing journals.
Yeah.
And like in his journal, you briefly see like push myself harder.
Yeah.
You know? And he's really like, he's in this constant grind. Like he's hustling and hustling. And I really like that part about him, like where he's just completely consumed by his work. But obviously, like you have to show how it's not healthy and stuff like that. Like,
yes.
You know, so it's like, like Selina Kyle, I think. You know, the scene where he first follows her back to her house, right? And her friend is there before she gets taken. That scene goes on for way too long. Like, we don't need to watch how she moves through the house. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's dressed as Catwoman. And
It doesn't add that much. Like,
it did add that much. Yeah.
And I agree. I feel like it was a bit rushed now that you say it.
I thought it was rushed as well. And even at the end where they're, you know, they separate. And for some reason, they're like both kind of, like, I can see why she wants him to come with her.
Yeah.
But I don't see why he would even consider it. Like, why?
Yeah.
Like, but saying that, this Batman-Catwoman relationship, it seems like they've spent an eternity together compared to the Dark Knight Rises one,
where they
somehow go away and live together.
And she was barely even Catwoman in that movie. Like, she was just someone.
Yes.
Yeah. She was Selina or something else. Not even Selina. These guys are way more closer to the Batman year one, right?
Like, yeah, it's more fleshed out. And I think they're trying to do a 3-movie arc with them. So I think eventually that relationship will be something we do believe. But just based off this one movie, probably not.
Yeah, that's probably like not a good place to – not a bad place to keep going. Like, what do you think sequel-wise, like in terms of where it goes from here?
Yeah, so,
Well, they do tease.
Yes. They tease.
This is the thing that I said was similar to Batman Begins. The end of Batman Begins, they tease the Joker.
Yeah.
And at the end of this, they tease the Joker.
You know what I thought you were talking about with that? There was a water issue in Batman Begins as well. There was a water pipe issue.
Yeah. There was.
But in terms of sequels, I like how she dropped, you know, she's going to Bloodhaven, which means like, you know, Nightwing is...
It's probably too soon. I could see them doing a Robin for the next one.
Yeah.
I would love them to do a Robin.
Yeah.
And it would be great if it was Dick Grayson.
I want them to wait. You know what I mean? I think we need more from this Batman without anyone else. Just like one more movie.
I think people do want a Nightwing movie heavily, but I feel like to do a Nightwing movie effectively, I want to see the Robin backstory first.
Yeah.
Or you have to do that in conjunction with like do flashbacks from Nightwing back and forth.
Yeah.
I think Nightwing movie would be great because he's basically Batman but funnier. Yeah. He's like Batman but he's Spider-Man.
Yeah, and he's younger, right?
Yeah.
And he's not as broken.
Not as broken,
You know what movie I really liked animated-wise? The comic and space office, Under the Red Hood?
Yeah.
Oh, man. That movie is phenomenal. And it's just like, for those who haven't seen it, like spoiler-wise, like spoiler alert, it's basically just another version of Robin, Jason Todd, who gets killed by the Joker before Batman can get to him. And I think he gets resurrected or something through the Lazarus Pit. And he comes back and he's the killing version of Batman. And it's a really great scene where there's a standoff between Red Hood, Joker, and Batman. And, you know, Red Hood is hunting Joker, trying to get him to pay for what he did to him. And he thinks that Batman's betrayed him because Batman didn't make it on time to save him from the Joker. And he still won't kill the Joker after all these years, you know? And he's like, how many more of your loved ones is it going to take for you to kill this maniac, you know? And it's like, definitely recommend
it. I think Under the Red Hood would be a great adaptation to the movie.
Yeah.
But the way I would have to do it is you have to do a movie first, Batman, Robin.
Yeah.
At the end of that movie, Jason Todd dies.
Yep.
And then you have to do another movie in between that doesn't have the Red Hood.
Yep.
And then you do the Red Hood movie.
100%.
Yeah.
I reckon if you do it back-to-back, it's too soon.
It's too soon.
People know what to expect.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I do have some information about intended sequel. So it is meant to be, this movie is meant to be one, the first one in a trilogy. So Pattinson and Reeves expressed interest in introducing Robin and featuring the Court of Owls.
Oh, yes.
Court of Owls would be amazing.
In this universe.
Yes, it would work so well.
Like, they've already got that systemic corruption situation going on, like some kind of Illuminati-based team or, like, faction with Talon.
Yep, and they 100%, this Bruce Wayne would 100% be initiated into the Court of Owls.
Yeah.
Do you know much about the Calendar Man?
Yeah, so that is the, he's in The Long Halloween, actually. He's a guy that's addicted to dates.
Yeah. It's a bit strange. He's kind of killing everyone on public holidays.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, they expressed interest in getting him in as well, and Mr. Freeze as well.
I would love to see Mr. Freeze.
If they did direct adaptation of
animated series.
Yeah, what's that episode called? Do you guys remember?
Heart of Ice.
Heart of Ice,
Yeah.
Would be amazing.
He's got a really sympathetic backstory, Mr. Freeze. Yeah. You know, and like, yeah, I think maybe we were talking about this a while back. Like, who would you cast if you had to have a Mr. Freeze on, you know, in this current day and age, with Paul Dano being Riddler type?
You would have to get someone that's sympathetic and also quite menacing when they need to be.
Yeah.
Which is, well, when we talked about it last time, I said Bryan Cranston would be a good choice for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was in the vein of, like, my mindset was, like, a little bit more Eastern European, you know, or something like you know, North
Vladimir
European.
Putin.
Yeah. It's kind of already playing that role. but nowhere near as sympathetic. But I think someone like, you know, that guy who plays Tarzan, like Alexander Skarsgård. Yeah, he's like, you know, you could get him under a suit, but he has played a bit of that vulnerable kind of, like, not rom-com, but like, kind of like that vulnerable emotional side with the Tarzan stuff. And you know he can act. He was in, Godzilla vs. Kong or something last? Like, Warner Brothers already likes him.
He's in that Big Little Lies TV show, and people seem to really like that, and apparently he's very good in it.
So. Oh, cool.
I think I said Mark Strong because he's bald.
Oh, yeah.
I guess you could get anyone, though, and make them bald. You just can't get a bald person. Oh, you can, I guess. You just put a wig on them. Yeah. So.
Or you just get Arnold Schwarzenegger back.
Mark Strong has been a villain before, right? In Shazam, he was the villain. Yeah,
Dr. Silvana. He was not bad in that.
Yeah, it was okay.
Yeah.
He's generally pretty good.
He's generally all right.
Yeah. In terms of spin-off series, so there's a Gotham City Police Department series that's been planned.
So that's apparently about, like, Jim Gordon kind of making his way up the ranks in a corrupt Gotham PD. Yeah.
That sounds great.
So I think that's going to be him, the transition from him being the detective to him being commissioner by the end of it.
And the other one is Penguin.
Keen on that.
This one is apparently after the aftermath of this movie. It's Penguin making his way up the ranks of the criminal underworld in Gotham City and eventually becoming like the kingpin of the criminal underworld.
Because in this movie, he's not anywhere near like the gang leader that he is in, you know, later iterations, right?
Yeah.
He's very much under Falcone. Yeah. And he's like opening doors for him, and he's like, you know. But it would be cool to see him as full blown Oswald Cobblepot.
And I think it'll probably be that transition to that.
Yeah. And I would do anything to see more of Colin Farrell in that role. Yes. Like, he's so good. Liked it a lot.
And I don't know if you've got this there, but they did announce another spin off series that's coming up.
I do not. What's the other one?
A couple of days ago, Matt Reeves said they're going to do an Arkham Asylum series.
No way.
Okay. Yeah.
That would be very cool.
Yeah. No further details on it, but that would be sick.
Yeah. You could blow open the Rogues Gallery from there. And all these minor villains that wouldn't make the feature film. You know, you could really enrich this. Matt Reeves, I think we haven't talked about yet, is like he did a really good world building job.
Mm.
That's how all these spin-offs are like being okay with being accepted, I think. Because if you had not a great world and Gotham wasn't liked, there's no way you could get away with that.
If the Gotham was shit, if it was just New York, then doing a Gotham PD series is just doing CSI. It's like why do you
CSI
bother?
New York. NYPD.
It's like, I hate to keep saying this, but like the Dark Knight trilogy, you just can't do spin-offs based on that universe. You know, there's not enough meaty depth there. Like that, like we said, like that city can be any city. Yeah, I don't know if you guys saw, but you guys probably did. Like, you know when they talk about, like, so Riddler's talking about later in the orphanage and he shows in that video of Thomas Wayne and how, like, he did this, like, mistake and whatever. The mistake, Edward Elliott is...
Hush.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I really want to see Hush.
So Hush is a comic book storyline. That reporter he has a son, and that son ends up being Hush. And actually, when they put up the picture of the reporter,
yeah,
it says Hush.
Yeah, it's like an Easter egg. Yeah.
I saw that. Yeah.
And like Hush is like this classic Batman villain that's like he is obsessed with Bruce Wayne and the family friends back in the day. And like he basically gets plastic surgery to look exactly like Bruce Wayne. And he like takes over Wayne Enterprises and does like he pretends to be Bruce Wayne. And then, yeah, it's like a really cool like introspective story for Batman to be like, you know, my family causes other issues.
They kind of wronged him. Yeah. And I think he tries to take down Batman, doesn't he? He tries to – because he figures out that
Bruce Wayne is
Batman.
Yeah.
He's one of the few that know, right?
Yeah.
It's cool. Like his costume's got like this like trench coat, but he's got bandages all over his face except for his eyes. I don't know. It's a very cool unseen feature film villain.
Yeah.
Which it's easily, you can easily set up here because of the Arkham.
Well, they kind of did set it up. Basically, did. Yeah.
Because it would make sense that if Edward Elliott, being the news reporter that ousted Thomas Wayne, got killed as a result of ousting him, and if they think that Thomas Wayne did it, it's easy to see how Hush can be born out of that.
Yeah.
He'll come out of nowhere and be like, hey, your dad.
You know, 100%. I'd rather, 100% rather see that than see the Joker again.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we might have to see the Joker. That one sequence where Riddler is in Arkham Asylum and he's having a conversation with the cellmate next door.
Unseen Arkham prisoner is the credit.
Yeah. So that particular
role. Definitely the Joker. Yeah.
almost definitely a Joker. And it was played by Barry Keoghan.
Yeah. So he's the guy in Eternals that plays Druig.
Yeah.
And you could kind of see the side of his face. Yeah.
Funnily enough, like 2 months ago, his brother, the actor's brother, posted on Twitter. He's like, oh, the secret's finally out. My brother's playing the Joker in the Batman.
Oh, no.
And like, it was all over, like, news media. And everyone's like, nah, it's a hoax because it got taken down almost immediately. It's like, nah, he was joking. And then I watch it in the theaters. I'm like, fuck, that guy just ruined this movie.
it's like the biggest, arguably the biggest spoiler of this movie.
Yeah.
Just that scene.
I felt like that could have been a post-credits scene.
Yeah.
But I don't know why it was in the main. It kind of, it's not even really in place where they had it.
Yeah.
It kind of just happens and then they switch back to Batman.
Yeah.
So it didn't really have to be where it was. I think it could have been like a mid-credits or a post-credits scene.
Yeah.
There was kind of like a post-credit thing. Not a scene.
It's just a website. Yeah. The same website that is in the movie.
And he just says goodbye.
Yeah.
It was a real like middle finger up to the audience, right? Yeah. Like, because you waited all that time and you think it's a Marvel movie.
The only other thing, before I forget, I should say this, that I think hints to someone else, is there's this one scene in this movie where Batman gets shot by a shotgun and then he's like lying on his back. Catwoman comes and saves him.
Oh.
And then he gets up. Catwoman's getting attacked and he uses this injection and he gets up and he starts beating up the guy. It's like a green vial and it's heavily theorized that that's Venom. And it's basically the
Bane?
Yeah, cool. Yeah. And that's why he goes absolutely crazy and he's like beating the shit out of the guy when he gets up. Yeah.
That's really cool, Link. Yeah. That scene where he gets up is acted really well. You can just see Pattinson just like let loose. He just goes nuts on this guy.
At the time, I didn't realize, but someone mentioned to me afterwards, I'm like, yeah, that's 100% Venom. It's green as well. It's like, it's got to be Venom. Yeah.
Dave Bautista as Bane? Dream casting?
He would be perfect as Bane.
He's also Latino, right? He's got some Latino history. Yeah.
Although, do you like the Bane that's just a skinny dude and then he gets the injection and then he gets jacked?
They could like do a Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
They could do a Captain America First Avenger situation with him and just keep Dave Bautista.
Yeah.
And just like, you know, CGI a smaller body on him or something.
Yeah.
I like the Bane that's like already a slightly jacked guy, but then he gets injected with the Venom and he's like the Rock.
My only thing is, like, with Bane, they just did such a good version.
Yeah, it's probably too soon.
Yeah. But it would be very cool.
Yeah.
It would be good to explore villains other than the ones that have already been in the movies.
Yeah. I would even be happy with, in that Arkham Asylum TV show, to just have a bit of Bane in it.
Yeah.
Like, but don't explore him in the main movies.
I'd like to see Clayface.
Oh, yeah.
The thing with, do you think Clayface would work in this universe? Like
is it a little bit too fantastical? I feel like this is too grounded, but it would be cool either way.
You could use him very well, I think, in terms of, you know, doubling up for people and
And even he's a very sympathetic character as well. If you've seen the animated series with, I think there's a 2-episode arc with him, and he's like an actor that's getting old or something, and then he wants to look young, and he uses this makeup and has detrimental effects on on his skin, and then he goes from there, and then he starts not getting jobs and stuff, so he turns to crime, and then he can morph himself into anyone because he's Clayface. It's interesting.
I remember him in the Arkham City game.
Mm.
He was awesome in that game.
The Rogues Gallery for Batman is very deep, and they seem to always go back to the same characters, so I hope they go into some of the lesser known characters.
I'm almost a bit annoyed this Joker scene even happened.
Yeah, like, I didn't need it.
Yeah, not at all. Like,
I didn't need it.
Yeah, like surely you would hint at someone else. Like even if you switch that to Freeze, it would be cooler. You know, I think people would think it's a completely fresh take. There's something like, you know, the Windows XP wallpaper that gives everyone some comfort seeing Joker in a Batman movie. Yeah. I don't know. It's just like you can't get away from it. Like
Joker is as popular as Batman is, I guess. So
yeah. Like, well, he made $1 billion.
Exactly. Like, on his own, by himself.
Without Bruce Wayne. Or Bruce Wayne's in it, but not Batman. Yeah.
I guess the money drive to have Joker in your movie is just so heavily weighted that it's hard to not put him in there.
This is the fourth Joker since The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. It's a lot of Jokers. And six Joker overall. And if you think about the amount of Batman movies there's been, where it's actually seven if you include the Lego Batman.
Yeah, it's true.
So
yeah.
If you think about the amount of Batman movies there's been and the amount of Jokers there's been, it's like...
It's oversaturated.
Last thing, I think the trailers for this were not great. We were talking about this because they kind of show all of the good action sequences within the trailers.
Yeah.
So I think that the car sequence, I'd already seen that in the trailer essentially, so it wasn't as impactful.
There were some cool parts that they did show in the trailer, but they showed the money shot, unfortunately. So
yeah.
Coming through the fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And the upside down shot
that was
of him.
Such a cool shot. Yeah. In terms of a striking fear in your enemies kind of Batman vibe. You know what though? Like from there, actually, the cinematography was really, really spectacular.
Very,
in this movie.
Yeah.
You know, the grappling hook. It's like you're like on the grappling hook with him, you know.
There was one part that they didn't nail, which I told you after the movie. Yeah. I don't know if you remember this part. It's when he base jumps off the building.
Yeah.
And then they do have like a angle where the camera's on his face.
Yeah, I don't like
it. Yeah, it looks so bad.
That was weird.
It looks so bad.
Yeah, it did look good.
And he's grimacing or I don't know. It was strange.
It looked odd. It looked really odd.
Yeah. I would have actually put the camera behind his ears, you know, and shown his ears.
Yeah, that like would have been
from,
cool.
From behind. His point of view. Yeah. The face was weird. I was like.
That was the only shot where I'm like, this is not great. Yeah.
That's a great scene, by the way, when he has to escape the GCPD.
Yes.
And he punches
also, that's going to be a meme forever where that there's going to be gifted so much, that scene where he punches Gordon in the face.
That was such a good punch.
Like, yeah.
And then afterwards, he's like, you should have pulled your punch. It's like, I did.
Classic. That's probably the closest we got to a joke in that movie.
I think Gordon has a couple of like chuckle type lines. Like they're going into a room or something, and he's like, and Batman's like, no guns. It's like, that's for you, man. Because Gordon's just a normal guy. Like, he needs a gun.
That's
like,
all he's got.
Like, if someone attacks him, he's got nothing.
Jeffrey Wright's great, isn't he?
He's what a guy.
Yeah.
Like, he's never missed. I don't think he's ever missed.
Nah.
Yeah. But you know what's interesting? Like, no one complained about Gordon being recast or any other cast, really.
I saw this TikTok online. There's some bad people in this world.
Yeah.
But I saw this. The guy that I saw the TikTok of was like critiquing this guy's take. But this guy essentially is like, there's not enough white people in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Okay. No.
No, he said there's not enough white people in this movie that are good. He's like, the only white people that are good are Batman. And he's like, the other good characters are like Gordon and he's black.
It's just, like, sometimes it's just like the race thing is really difficult. And I think this is a whole other conversation, but it's like, I don't think that the good and bad has anything to do with the race. I think it's got something more to do with the character and how good the character is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And really, like Jim Gordon being Jeffrey Wright is a superstar casting. And he nails it.
He nailed the character. He was the best person to play it and he nailed it.
Selena Kyle was the best person to be played by Zoe Kravitz. She nailed it, you know.
Also, Selena Kyle, the walk, she absolutely nailed the walk.
She nailed her walk. Yeah. The catwalk.
The catwalk, Yeah.
There's still people that think Michelle Pfeiffer's better, but
yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of nostalgia.
Yeah, I know. There's that, a lot of nostalgia with that movie.
I guess if
I
you
just don't see that.
Rose tinted glasses, right?
Yeah, like, I don't see that movie in the same way because I watched it later. But yeah.
If you grow up watching something and you love it and it's like you read the comics and it comes out and it's live action and you're like, oh, this is what it is. And then you grow up and you're like, yeah, that was the best one. I saw it when I was 12 and it was the best movie I've ever seen. So.
Yeah, it's like the Tobey Maguire vibe, you know?
Yeah.
Like he's got some massive nostalgia. But, you know, back with the other topic, like I think – like in terms of casting, it's really just about like the being true to the character, right? And like sometimes you can take risks with interpretation, but it happens in multiple franchises. But I think it's actually a really good thing that's progressive and can really push the boundary of what this character could mean if you don't change too much. Like if you don't change it outside of what people think the character is, you know, too much. Like you're like, look, we're still being true to the story. We're being true to the character. We're doing what's best for the story, and then it makes complete sense. I think it's when people try to force or sometimes like try to take it out of when it's out of context or like, you know, it's jarring. That's when it's an issue.
You shouldn't like force diversity as well. Like you shouldn't do it just for the sake of it.
Yeah.
Like you just got to get the right person for the character. So it doesn't matter what they are.
Yeah. I think sometimes it's necessary though, like because there's not enough like storytelling diversity in terms of like representation. And I think that can be really important, but it's just, you know.
Especially in the superhero medium. Like lots of people say, oh, why are you changing this white character to a person of color?
Yeah.
Why did you change a person of color character to a white character then?
Yeah.
But the problem with that thinking is there is a million white characters throughout comic books.
Yeah.
And a majority of the heroes and villains in most comic books are white, but then you have like a fair few characters that are people of color.
Yeah.
So if you change one of the fair few that you have already to a white character, then it's taking one of the characters that they have off the table.
One of the few.
One of the few.
Yeah.
But if you change one of the million white characters to a person of color, you've still got another 500,000 to fall back on. So
yeah, for sure.
If they nail it in terms of what the character is meant to be, and the actor is great, then there's no reason to not go for it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, if you think about the origin of these, like the story, kind of wrap this topic up. It's like you have, when the Detective Comics was written, it was 1939, right? And everything after that until the 1970s in our history has really been dictated by the times around it, right? And it's like representation was a dictation of its time. And now we are really like strongly, hopefully changing the tide in the right direction. But it's just going to take some transitioning towards the right thing. Black Panther is one of my top five movies of all time, not just for what it does cinematically, but like what it does for culture. And I think that, you know, it's like the bigger question about whether movie makers have like a responsibility to change the culture. And I think that they don't actually have the responsibility, but I think that the best movies do. I don't know. This is the, like, Jim Gordon was amazing. Jeffrey Wright was a hero.
And I think 99% of the people around the world would absolutely love his representation from it.
Yeah. And I actually wouldn't cast anyone else now, except for maybe Matt Reeves, because he looks like Jim Gordon in the promo.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
I did like Gary Oldman, though.
Matt Reeves looks a lot like Gary Oldman.
Yeah, he does.
Apparently, the story around his Mo right now is that, like, he is like helping set up the Gotham, the police like TV spinoff. Right?
And everyone in the show has Mo. So,
And he was like, you know, I went through lockdown, I shaved my head and did that thing like everyone. Then I was like, it's a great time to grow a Mo because no one's going to be around. And then he just kept it because he's like, I got everyone else to do it, so I'm going to do it.
Solidarity. That's like Suicide Squad, where David Ayer had a goatee in that movie. And if you watch that movie, there's a lot of people in that movie that have goatees.
It's like the director's getting in the trenches.
Yeah.
Right?
All right. Anything else?
Nah, I think pretty much covered it.
Good movie.
Great movie.
Yeah. So we definitely recommend it.
Kind of made me want to watch it again talking about it, to be honest.
Yeah.
There's a lot more in it than I initially intended to discuss. So yeah, maybe I will watch it again as well.
Yeah. It's obviously a long movie.
Yeah.
But is definitely, I feel like, one that you have to watch in cinemas. Like,
definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, at least once. Yeah. All right. So if people want to get in touch with us and tell us how they felt about the Batman, how they go about it.
So we're on Cognitive Recalibration on all platforms, or you can email us at cognitiverecalibrationpodcast@gmail.com.
If you want to support the podcast, you can do so via giving us a review on iTunes or Spotify. That makes us more discoverable on search engines. So if you search The Batman Review, a along with the 500,000 other people that are doing Batman reviews, you might see us near the top.
Nice.
Cool. And thanks, Rev, for coming on. Bring your enthusiasm for the Batman, and we'll definitely get you back on if you're, of course, if you're interested.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me on. Yeah. It's been I normally do this without a mic, so we'll just be doing it, just talking to anyone that wants to hear it. So it's really cool when you have other people that care about it or like are interested in talking about it to this level as well. So
it's funny because I've got so much like knowledge and like stuff I know about comic book movies and stuff. But in day-to-day life, I feel really awkward telling people about it because it's borderline crazy how much I know about it.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, where do I have the space mentally to keep all that?
Yeah.
But it's there.
It's an avenue for you to release outlet. All of that.
Yeah.
And it's so impractical to bring it up with anyone else. Like, you're like, oh, Batman drives a car like that. And they're like, okay, I'm just trying to park my car. Like, it's like, you don't want to bring that up, you know?
Yeah.
thanks for having me on. It's been awesome.
No worries. Welcome. No worries. And we'll definitely get you back on at some stage. You can pick the movie. And
there's plenty more great ones coming this year.
Yeah.
I think. Yes. And maybe we can look at like a non-comic book property. That'd be
easier.
There's some good stuff coming out this year that's a non-comic book. So,
Yeah, we can.
For sure.
All right. So, thanks everyone for listening. So, it's been another longish episode. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you're all staying safe. And we'll see you in the next one. I won't say what it is because it's probably Ghostbusters Afterlife, but it might not be.
Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah.
Right. See you later, guys. Bye.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.